Chapter 2. Not only did the new car have a CD player, it also had a bunch of CDs stashed in the console. But mostly weird new age shit like Tree Frogs and Tropical Rain, or Forest Wind and Flute. Wade kept switching between Winter Birdsong and the chanting that Clint had tried to abandon with the station wagon. Who the hell takes nature recordings on a camping trip? Clint demanded. Because the car was full of shit, like an easy erect tent, camp stove, and a tarp. The tarp, Clint figured, could also be for body disposal. And maybe his. But Wade looked hurt at the suggestion. At all of his suggestions.
This is my personal collection,
he grumbled, and switched Birdsong for Whale Song.
And if you want me to kill you, all you have to do is say so.
Clint was tempted, just because it sounded like a dare, that there was the chance that Wade would actually follow through with it. Instead, he drove in silence, and refused any food or drink Wade offered him, and pointed out the ravine to their left several times, just to make sure Wade wouldn't forget that it would be a very bad idea to try anything. They switched cars twice, and killed a man once. Or Clint killed a man, and Wade killed a bunch, on another one of Wade's shithole town stopovers, and ended up with another RV. Which was great, because the little car from the freakish restaurant hadn't had any room to stretch out in, and Clint's side had been killing him ever since. He took whatever pills Wade shoved at him, and since the body disposal tarp had been ditched with the car, let himself enjoy the muzzy painlessness and the fold-out bed. There was a comforter in the stowage underneath. It was the best thing that had happened since Natasha had shot him. Are we switching cars because you're on a murder spree?
We.
Because we're on a murder spree, Clint asked from under it, his back tucked comfortably against the wall of the RV, which gave him a view of the entire cramped interior and the illusion of safety. Or to dodgy Avengers.
Maybe I just like cars,
Wade offered.
Maybe I like change. Maybe change is important for growth. Maybe some of us don't develop unhealthy attachment to mom cars.
Clint tuned him out. He was getting good at it. Stopping to shower at a mostly empty rest stop gave him the opportunity to poke at his side. It didn't seem to be getting better too fast. Clint figured it was because at S.H.I.E.L.D. he'd have been stuck on bed rest in medical, then handed over to Natasha, or Steve, to be threatened or lectured into more bed rest. And instead, he'd been lugged, shoved and carried between cars, up steps, laid out on roofs, and made to haul weaponry. Bruising extended up his ribs and down to his hip, pooling along the bone. Deep purple and with a halo of green and yellow radiating across his belly. He bet his back looked worse, at least bruising-wise. The wounds themselves had been neatly cleaned up, entry and exit. Clint didn't think Wade had done it. Clint didn't really think he'd have survived if Wade had done it, even as careful as he'd been later. The amount of blood in the car had suggested more serious damage than could be fixed with the tape and bandages that seemed to have been the extent of Wade's first aid kit. More than adequate for a man with Wade's healing factor. Woefully understocked for anybody else. He pressed a hand to the ache and let the hot water sluice over his neck and back. Wade was already banging on the door. Had been for several minutes. Continuously. But Clint ignored him. The rest stop had roomy shower stalls, way better than the cramped bathroom on board the RV, and easier for him to move in when his side was radiating pain all the way up to his fucking armpit.
I hope you left me some water.
Wade grouched, and waited till he was dressed to cuff him to a sink's drainage pipe.
Every morning it's the same. You don't cook, you don't clean, you don't even try to look pretty for me, but you use up all the hot water.
Someone could come in, Clint pointed out, because if Wade was evading the law and the Avengers, having someone handcuffed to the plumbing in a public restroom was probably a little suspicious looking to the public at large. It seemed like a good way to get someone to call the cops.
Oh, don't start to get shy now,
Wade said from the other side of the stall door, and started singing as the water came on. Clint let his head rest against the tiled wall, and made himself as comfortable as he could on the floor, while Wade mangled a soap opera. Wade slipped up. And even though the wise thing to do would have been to shut the hell up, Clint couldn't help himself. He waited until Wade was switching Songs from the Rainforest Canopy for Tuvan throat singing, then said, I know we're in Kentucky, and gloated. Wade paused, looked out of the windshield. They were, as usual when Clint was the one driving, in the middle of nowhere.
Oh?
Wade asked. And Clint knew he was dangerous, but this was the first time he'd sounded like it. And then the threatening tone was gone, and he was saying,
You haven't been a very good assassin, so...
I've been a stellar assassin, Clint argued.
Pish-posh,
Wade said, waving a hand.
You've been nothing but trouble, and this sort of thing is exactly what I mean.
He was pronouncing his words with a snippy sort of precision that reminded Clint a little of Jarvis, if he could be offended.
When I say no knowing things, I mean no knowing things.
He sighed and fluttered the fingers of one hand at Clint.
What a pity that now I'll have to kill you.
Jesus Christ! We passed a fucking horse farm! It was on their sign! It's not my fault what they call themselves. Wade looked at him for a second or two, head tilted incredulously, then patted him.
There, there. Don't get so upset. It was a joke. You take everything so seriously. Honestly, have a sense of humor.
You could kill me, Clint offered, maybe 100 miles after Wade had acquired banjo music. And a banjo at some pit stop. Clint had acquired bananas, a loaf of bread, a quart of orange juice and a gallon jug of water, which had been a relief, because Wade was back to feeding him instant noodles and frozen pies. But also awkward, because any money he might have had in his clothing had burnt with them. He had the choice of shoplifting or whining at Wade, like the world's most health-conscious 10-year-old.
I thought you liked string instruments.
Wade asked, studying a folder and eating Clint's bananas while Clint drove. He had little reading glasses on, but at least he ditched the hat. Wade tossed the banana peel out the window and reached for another. Clint scowled. If you eat all of those, and then try and make me eat marshmallows for dinner, I swear to God, Clint threatened. It was empty. There wasn't anything he could do to Wade that would stick for more than an hour, tops. Wade shut the file, checked a watch he wasn't wearing, then crooned,
Oh, it looks like nap time for cranky assassins.
And jerked thumb to indicate the back of the RV. Clint stopped without pulling over, making sure to brake harshly, just because, and stormed to the back of the RV, where the throwaway bed was still blocking the hall. Wade threw the Pez dispenser at him.
Take two and shoot for me in the morning.
Seriously, Clint said. Don't eat all my fucking food.
Next job.
Wade announced, throwing his arms up in a grand ta-da motion. They were on a flat roof. And Clint had kind of figured that was why they were there. The rifle had made a reappearance. And the handcuffs. Clint sighed. It was hot. It wasn't morning at all.
Keep your eye on the Queen of Hearts.
Wade was narrating, while Clint ignored him and checked his rifle.
Now you see her, now you don't. Now you... Clint!
Yeah, yeah, now I don't. Clint said. I'm listening. Wade made an annoyed sound. A heartfelt sigh. It was so gratifying it was almost childish. But Clint smirked anyway. Who are we killing this time? Clint asked, just to push it. And Wade sat down and crossed his arms over his chest.
You learn slow, don't you? Did I pick the stupid puppy from the pound? Should I have taken Starkers?
Tony and Wade trying to out-talk each other would be amazing. Assured mutual destruction. As much as Wade was destructible, which wasn't very much. Tony, though. Tony would be left seething. Don't get to know stuff, Clint recited, because Wade looked like he was waiting for it. He looked away from the rifle, and Wade did a card trick with a stack of Polaroids.
Pick a card, any card.
Clint picked.
Nope, that's not the guy. Pick again.
This time, he had three targets to pick off. It was a lot for conventional assassination sniping, but not much compared to Avengers jobs. Of course, Avengers jobs tended to be more of a running, dodging, beat back the hordes deal. And this was definitely not an Avengers deal. He couldn't count a single time that he'd been cuffed by the angle to a water pump's housing during an Avengers gig. It was a pain in the ass to be shooting that way. His movements too constrained, and no way to shift much and still be able to reach his rifle, or see through the scope. Scooting forward tugged painfully at the cuff, but Clint did it anyway. The pull in his side hurt way more anyway. He was thinking, I think we're still in Kentucky. Collecting what little sense of place he had, when the first target appeared. Just for a moment, framed in a window yelling. It was enough. Whoever he'd been yelling at ducked back out of the room as he went down, and Clint swore, jerked at the cuff. He'd been fucking made! The worst part, Clint thought, as he heard the thunder of feet on the stairs below. So he wasn't even hidden, just laid out on his belly on the roof, with his fucking rifle. Hey guys, he thought, a little hysterically, this isn't what it looks like. He twisted onto his back and wrangled the rifle over. If by some miracle it was Wade coming up those steps, then he'd just have to regenerate his face. Clint wasn't taking the chance. The door kicked open. Clint fired. One shot. Two. The rifle didn't have enough rounds. Fuck, he said, and let himself fall back. Fuck! And then the miracles of chance that followed Wade's insanity kicked in, because one of the guys said,
Boss, he's chained up.
And didn't instantly kill him. God damn it, Clint swore, rattling the fucking cuff, even though it might have just saved his life. Once he'd been about to get his own arrow fed to him, when out of nowhere the Hulk had come through a wall and tossed alien hitmen and alien rent-a-cop all over the place. That wasn't going to happen now.
Boss?
The guy was saying.
Boss?
Obviously not getting a response from his radio, and Clint tried not to grin. Wade was a fucking psychopath. But he was a psychopath who was damn good at his job. For a brief, troubling second, Clint felt a wash of pride at being associated with him. Then felt nauseated by it.
Who are you working for?
Guy demanded, sounding more than a little freaked out. Clint mumbled.
What? What the fuck are you saying?
He had a gun, and Clint had a water pump chained to his leg. So he figured he couldn't blame the guy too much for acting like a cocky amateur and sauntering over. It wasn't like Clint didn't have one free leg. He used it in a sneaky twist of his body to bring the guy down, sending his gun clattering across the roof. The rest of him landed on Clint. It felt like his side exploded, like his rib might have cracked. His breath left him in a wheeze, but the guy was trying to get up, so he raised the rifle and brought it down on his head. It was heavy. It hurt. He tried to think about that instead of the fact that he was bludgeoning a guy to death with it. Then he kicked the body off himself and threw up. Wade? Clint tried, every so often. He was coming up with other things he didn't want to think about. Like that he didn't owe Wade loyalty and could have said, I was kidnapped by some Deadpool asshole. Let me go and let's kill him. Or, yeah, take me to your boss. But could I borrow a phone? And also, where are we? He also tried to not think about the possibility the guy hadn't been a bad guy. That maybe Wade just had a contract. Maybe he was security. Maybe he was even good. Don't look at the body, don't look at the body, and don't look at the sun, Clint told himself and closed his eyes. He was thirsty. He was breathing all over the roof. Where the fuck was Wade? Sorry, guy, he said after a while, not looking over. That wasn't really fair. And then, shouldn't have dropped your weapon, amateur.
You only got one of them,
someone was saying, and turned his face. Clint threw up again. He recognised Wade's voice and tried to tell him to quit moving him, but the words came out as a rasp.
You got me killed,
Wade whispered, and Clint felt himself hauled to his feet. His side screamed protest.
So don't whine. Resurrection takes as long as resurrection takes. And it looks like you shot the wrong guys.
Gave me exactly 3 bullets, Clint managed, because he wasn't taking that shit. And Wade snorted.
I thought you never miss.
Clint drank every time Wade remembered that he'd been left in the sun, shackled to a pump. Which wasn't all of the time, but frequent enough that he wasn't entirely miserable. His side hurt, worse than he remembered it being at any time since Wade's not apartment. Breathing pulled at it. Trying to move sent pain shooting up his side, and even down his leg.
Don't die while I'm driving,
Wade said, turning the air conditioning vents on him.
We have to get out of here.
Where's here? Clint tried, just because he had to. He'd been too hot on the roof, but the air blowing on him was making him freeze and the comforter was out of reach somewhere. Wade patted him.
Ohio,
he said. Then he went to start the car and put one of the concertos on. It wasn't so much that Wade was an asshole to him, but that Wade had dealt with him like a kid put in charge of a pet that he had no idea how to care for. Like the time he and Barney had found a baby squirrel in their yard and tried to raise it in secret in their father's tool shed for 3 days, until it inevitably died. Clint remembered trying all his favourites. Chocolate chip cookies or bits of brownie from school lunch. Sweet corn he'd stolen from his own dinner. In pretty much the same way that Wade fussed and tried to make him eat funnel cakes and pot stickers. And then more canned pasta. And then moped and sulked when Clint refused. Or threw it back up. Just water, Clint groaned. When Wade tried to get him to drink something sickeningly bright blue, It could have been sports drink. But considering what else Wade had offered him, it seemed unlikely. And violins, he added, when Wade looked like he was about to switch back to tree frogs. Leave the violins.
I don't know what you have against bongos,
Wade chided.
You've become such a music snob.
Clint thought they drove for 2 days, but he couldn't be sure, because most of the time he drifted, one hand pressed protectively over his re-injured side, waking long enough to complain about Wade's choice of music, or how bumpy the road was, or just to complain for the hell of it. It was nice to have an excuse to be the unreasonable pain in the ass for once. Wade wasn't fazed. He played his banjo. He argued with non-existent passengers. He backseat drove himself. A critical monologue that he seemed to genuinely resent. And he shouted at Clint to
cheer up, buckaroo.
Every time he grumbled. Where are we going? Clint slurred, when the terrain got hilly again. But he seemed to have used up his good assassin cred, or Wade no longer felt guilty about being temporarily dead, and leaving him to goons and sunstroke.
Na-na-na,
he tutted, and Clint decided it wasn't worth the goddamn effort. Eventually they'd pass some kind of signage, and it was more likely that Wade would miss his info-gathering. If he didn't keep drawing attention to it. Wade tried to make them change cars, but it was a no-go. Just leave me. Clint tried when his legs refused to hold him, and his side refused Wade's attempt to haul him. He hoped it sounded magnanimous. Someone will find me. He wasn't entirely sure he wanted to be found. He had a criminal kill list again. Instead of just the shady government-sanctioned S.H.I.E.L.D. kill list. Wade looked at him like he was nuts, which was more than a little bit insulting. At the same time, Clint was a bit impressed by how expressive he could be through the mask.
No one will find you,
he said.
Where do you think we are?
I don't know where we are, Clint yelled, or tried to. It came out as more of a loud rasp. How the hell am I supposed to know where we are? You fucking drug me every time we get near a fucking miles two sign.
You'll starve before someone finds you.
Wade went on, ignoring the accusation.
There's nothing left in the mini-fridge but half a Kit Kat.
Who the hell saves half a Kit Kat? Who the hell did half of what Wade did? Who the hell kidnapped people right off battlefields for no damn reason?
I saved it for you.
Wade said, sounding hurt. Then, quieter.
Because I ate all your fruit.
Damn it. I want real food. Real food, Wade. Wade sniffed.
You're so ungrateful. Don't I put a roof over your head, shoes on your feet, expose you to culture and take you places?
By culture? Wade probably meant the banjo music. Clint put his back to him, even though he had to roll onto his injured side to do it.
Just go to sleep, Dopeyhead,
Wade said crankily.
I don't want to listen to your vetching anymore.
He must have been actually annoyed, because he popped out the violin concerto and went back to singing along to Whale Song and Surf.
We might not have a call to trace, Tony said, dropping a file onto the kitchen table. It landed with a flop, a couple of sheets print out sliding out of it. But we have a body count. Steve looked at it, looked up, then had Tony's nod, reached over and pulled the file in front of him, flipped it open. The photos show bullet wounds instead of arrows, but the work had Clint written all over it. The projected firing angle impossible for most marksmen, but nothing at all for Clint. The results were effortlessly tidy. Single shot, instant kill. Except for the man bludgeoned in the head. That wasn't Clint's usual method, but it wasn't like he was useless up close. Steve had trained with him, and he knew what Clint was capable of if his position was compromised.
Do we have anything tying these guys together? Steve asked.
Because Clint could have done this, but it surprised him that Clint would, that he had.
They're filth, and they work for filth, and other filth probably took out the hit, Tony said dismissively. Except for the one that's a prince. He's royal filth.
Why would Clint?
Tony shrugged. We'll find him, Cap. We'll find him, and then we'll drag him home, and then we'll ask 1,001 questions. He tapped a photo. The guy's on the roof.
This was a few days ago, so we know he wasn't dead then.
So he's not likely to be dead now, Natasha put in, and picked up the photo, scanned it. The corner of her lip tugged downwards. Tony plucked it back. There, there, Romanov. Try not to think about how you shot him.
Clint let himself think for exactly 4 seconds about what he was doing. And then he pushed the clown's head back and popped 2 of the pills into his hands. He probably shouldn't, was what the annoying nagging voice in the back of his head, that sounded like Tony, but talked like Steve, insisted. But his side hurt. And even though it had to be past midnight, Wade was still going strong, driving too fast on the bumpy road. The bouncing was agonizing. Clint swallowed them dry, then listened to the Tree Frog CD Wade was arguing with, until he started to feel numb and sleepy.
You out again?
Was the last thing he heard. And noted that Wade sounded cranky. Good. Let him be pissed. He woke up to arguing. Human voices, not Wade and the Tree Frogs. And for one terrifying moment, he thought he'd started to hear Wade's imaginary people. That he was inside Wade's head. And then he cracked his eyes open and saw someone leaning in the doorway of the RV, back to him. Red hair. Tasha?
I don't know what you think you're doing,
she was saying to Wade. And the accent was all wrong. Clint frowned.
But there are people going out of their minds looking for him. Aw, Red, he's fine. Fine. Wade, he looks like mincemeat. Doesn't look that bad to me,
Wade said in his sulking voice. Not Natasha. Made a very Natasha-like sound of irritation.
That's because you have a completely fucked up injury scale. You cut off your own fingers, for Christ's sake, It was just fingers.
Wade moped, and sounded like he wanted to scuff his toe.
And they grew back, eventually. Look, don't be mad, I found him. He's not a puppy, you can't just find him and take him with you.
Not Natasha snapped, and turned. Saw Clint watching. Hey, Clint said. And then, probably because he was still a little high, said, he wasn't that bad.
Don't defend him,
she said.
What is wrong with you?
But came and put a hand to his forehead. Clint flinched. Not for any reason, probably just because Wade was the only person he'd seen, not counting targets, in what felt like weeks. And the most he'd touched anyone during that whole time was the guy he'd beaten to death with his rifle. Sorry, Clint muttered. Tired.
Yeah,
she said.
Yeah, I bet you are. You look like hell.
She was a lot nicer than Wade. Wade was a fucking ass.
Jesus, Wade, he's burning up. I can't believe you haven't killed him yet.
Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., Clint pointed out, and tried to sound tough. It didn't impress her any more than it would have Nat.
Hush, sweetie,
she said absently, then went back to telling Wade off. Clint liked her. Where are we? Clint tried, and felt the warm feeling of assured victory as Wade's mask crunched in a way that meant he was going narrow-eyed.
Terry!
Wade whined before she could give an answer. And Clint smirked and settled back. It was good enough. Red, not Nat, Terry, whoever, had Wade on the ropes. He would just listen and enjoy watching him squirm.
Teresa Cassidy,
she announced belatedly and held her hand out. Clint tried to shake it, but the angle was weird, and he couldn't shift his own weight with the way he was lying. And in the end, she just caught his fingers and gave them a careful jiggle.
And you're Clint Barton, misplaced Avenger. Your face has been all over the proverbial milk box.
I was kidnapped, Clint said, and she fished in her pocket and came up with a phone, a little gem-shaped bob dangling off it.
I heard. What's your home phone number, Avenger?
She asked. In New York.
Clint said, like he was trying for casual. He sounded, actually, like he did after Tony dragged him out for a weekend on the town. Rough and not quite all there.
Maybe you should think about dropping in then, Tony said, matching his tone, fingers playing over his keyboard, tracing the call.
No, I'm not... in the city.
Upstate, huh? Going for a little B&B, are you, Hawkeye? I know a cozy little place. Clint made an annoyed, tired sound, and Tony dropped it. Asked, Are you okay? You've been busy for a guy missing half his guts.
Wasn't that bad. You saw, huh?
We'll deal, Steve cut in. Tell us where you are.
Clint laughed, distant and tinny. And Tony wasn't sure he could lay that entirely on the connection, which was pretty good, for once, now that he had a proper phone and one that Wade wasn't tampering with.
I just wanted to let you know I was okay,
Clint said.
You can stop chasing me.
What? Barton, have you scrambled your... There was a brief scuffle, someone talking in the background, and Clint saying,
Hey.
And then a new voice came on the line, female and irritated.
This phone belongs to Teresa Cassidy, Tony said, reading off his trace. Hi there. I think you have something of ours, Teresa Cassidy.
Well, I don't want it. You can come pick him up. Tony took a second to think about that, and to dissect her tone, then decided that Clint hadn't seemed particularly alarmed. Is he? He looks like hell. Wade couldn't keep a cactus alive, let alone your... Whoa, shit. There. Gotta go. Track the phone, Iron Man. I'll try to keep the... Keep one of them alive, anyway.
Try to make it R1, Tony said, because I'm not up for a trade. Deadpool would probably eat my houseplants.
Then there was shouting, and the phone hung up. Where do you think you're going?
Teresa demanded, storming back as Clint considered lowering himself the last step to the ground. It was a fucking drop. Easing himself down meant using muscles that maybe didn't actually look like ground meat. But damn if they didn't feel like it. He was still contemplating the earth, a good foot and change below, with bleary resentment, gripping the edge of the door when Teresa hung up and shoved her phone away.
Go ahead, jump,
she said, folding her arms across her chest.
And then I'll just have to scrape you into the car and you'll still end up at the hospital.
Clint glared, but at the dirt, unreasonably angry at its distance. Fuck, he said. Teresa shuffled him back inside.
Your team's coming to get you,
she said.
Now lie down or sit down before you fall over.
Clint considered fighting her, but the word that came out of his mouth was, Okay. And since he'd said it, he decided he might as well go along with it. And stumbled the goddamn mile back to the fold-out bed, and lowered himself onto the edge of it. Everything was fine till Wade left me on a roof, he told her, putting a hand over his side as he let himself collapse backwards. Hitting the mattress, even soft as it was, hurt enough to squeeze dampness from the corners of his eyes.
Hey, I was dead,
Wade called from outside.
That wasn't fun either, all right? Wade?
Teresa snapped, and Wade shut up. Pouted, but shut up. Neat trick. Or at least, he shut up for a bit.
We should take your car.
He piped back up, a few minutes later, even though he could have said it right away, before Clint had struggled all the way back inside.
Since this vehicle is stolen.
Changing cars meant abandoning things, especially since Teresa insisted on not putting up with bullshit, which tragically included the set of violin CDs. But not, somehow, Tree Frogs and Flute. Or Wade's banjo and fishing hat. Teresa didn't tell him he looked like an idiot. So Clint didn't bother either this time. And concentrated instead on the way he couldn't really lie down across the back seat of the little car. He wasn't sure how he was going to get out of the two-door. He'd barely managed to get in, and that with manhandling from Wade, grouching about how he was easier to manage when he was unconscious. Teresa probably didn't approve of that last, because she gave Wade another look. She reminded Clint a bit of Steve, actually, and the disgruntled looks he gave the rest of the team, now and then, when they exercised their right to act like civilians. There was a speaker mounted in the door right by Clint's head, and rhythmic croaking came out of it, along with the sound of rain and a single flute. He folded his arms over his head and missed the comforter in the RV, and the station wagon they'd abandoned, and the decrepit mill where it was quiet and there were no goddamn frogs. Or at least not ones accompanied by wind instruments.
I can't take this shit,
Teresa said after about 4 minutes, and ejected Wade's CD, set it neatly in its box with one hand still on the steering wheel, then chucked it out of the window. Clint cheered her slightly, then out loud when she flicked the radio on, and for the first time in forever, there was a mention of place and date and time of day. It felt strange. Like coming back from an op to find he'd missed a global event, to discover that while Wade had been dragging him around the country's back roads, there was still Tuesday, and commercials and pop music. Teresa turned the radio down at the soft noise he let escape, and asked,
"Okay back there, Avenger?"
Which... Right. Avenger. He had so much explaining to do, and it was a toss-up what Cap would think about the fact that his resistance had been largely non-existent. He'd just taken the shots Wade had set up. And when he hadn't, it hadn't been for lack of trying. Wade... He tried, but Teresa was the one who glanced back.
Take it easy. We're almost there,
she said. Then her phone jangled. Wade picked it up.
Oh, it's you, Tony said, hitting speaker for Steve's benefit. Where's Hawkeye? Everybody says that like I'm a bad guy or something, Wade said, sounding hurt. You're the ones who shot him. Natasha flinched at that, and Steve made a face at her that was maybe supposed to be a supportive smile, but failed miserably at getting that message across. We want him back, Tony says. Maybe he doesn't want to go back, Wade countered, and a female voice snapped at him to shut up. There were car sounds, so they were on the move, but Tony's trace wasn't showing much change of location. They were driving pretty slow. Too slow to be making any kind of getaway. I hope you're not assisting that lunatic in his kidnapping and holding with coercion of our injured.
Give Clint the phone, Steve interrupted, butting in with Captain Firmness.
and Wade made a whiny kid noise, and after a muted thump and clunk and chimed a jingle, Clint picked up.
20 minutes, buddy, Tony told him. We're on our way.
There was a long silence, and then Clint said, reluctantly,
All right.
All right? What the hell is that? You want to hear about the nervous breakdown you've been giving Steve and Natasha? Clint's breath puffed against the phone's mic, but there was no answer. Tony said, Clint, hey, but then the call cut out.
God damn it,
Steve said, and Tony looked at him and ran through a few comment ideas, then decided it was too easy and let it go.
By the time they pulled up outside an old weatherboard-covered house, Clint had figured two things out. One, Teresa wasn't in on whatever it was that Wade was into, but she knew enough about it to have opinions. And two, those opinions were mostly, but not entirely, against Wade. She was against the abducting and holding prisoner, though. At least there was that. Clint shifted around until he could kick the back of Wade's seat, getting claustrophobic now that they were stopped, and he was waiting to climb out.
Do you see what I've had to put up with?
Wade asked, gesturing at the back seat like Clint was their recalcitrant child.
Yeah, my heart bleeds for you,
Teresa said, folding her own seat forward so she could lean in and peer at Clint.
Need a hand? I can't carry you all the way up the front steps, but if you sit tight...
Clint had had enough of sitting tight. He grabbed for the edge of the door and hauled himself as upright as he could. Then half stumbled, half fell out of the car, leaned against it with his hand pressed to his side, panting and pretending his eyes weren't watering from the effort. Teresa huffed, but put a hand on his arm for a second, maybe to make sure he wasn't about to tip over, then went around the back of the car and popped the little trunk, grumbled,
Idiots,
and then yelled,
Wade, get your guns out of my car. I don't want to see them, and I don't want to get pulled over with them. What?
Wade asked, sounding hurt.
You're not staying. I have this place all stocked up for winter. Pickled all my own vegetables, canned my fruit harvest.
Wade trailed off as he hefted the gun case and tucked one of the handguns into the waistband of Clint's jeans. Like he thought they were heading into a firefight, and not into a house that seemed like he'd secured, if not outright owned. But then, it was possible that this was just another random hideaway. Clint couldn't really tell. And when he gave Wade a questioning look, all he got was a shrug and a grin. He could tell by the way the mask pulled. Like, Wade thought the exchange was about his girlfriend being unreasonable and wanted them to get along. Teresa gave them both a flat, unimpressed look. And Clint, maybe a little weirdly, forced himself to straighten up and take his own weight, while Wade got busy arming himself with the other gun and slipped into a vest Clint hadn't seen before. It matched the fishing hat. He stopped, looked at Wade, asked, Are you ditching me here? Surprising himself by how opposed to the idea he was. You better leave me a can opener this time.
What?
Wade sounded hurt. His hat slid into an appropriate droop, sitting lopsided on his head.
We're not ditching you. You think that's what I'm like? You think I haven't seen that movie?
He could mean any movie, or none at all, or one he was making up right then in his head. Clint sighed. Okay, but your girlfriend called in the backup. You realize that, right?
Backup, schmackup. Let's go inside and make pancakes, barricade some doors, plan a last stand.
Clint wasn't sure he wanted to take a last stand against Steve and Tony. Definitely didn't want to take one, coerced or otherwise, against Natasha. But he said, okay, grabbed what he could of his stuff, and then concentrated on putting one foot in front of the other, and aimed himself at the house porch. Wade did, actually, make pancakes. From a mix that had been sitting in a plastic jug in a kitchen cupboard, and there was no way to tell if it had been there forever. Or if Wade kept the place as secretly well-stocked as the abandoned diner had been. Clint decided to round it up to real food anyway, and stubbornly worked his way through the short stack, while Wade changed track and started dragging furniture around. "I'd ask if you know what he's planning?" he asked eventually, around a mouthful. "But I'm not really sure I want to know."
"I'm not sure I want to know,"
Teresa said. And it was nice not to be confused by himself anymore.
"Guess your RV wasn't a low-key enough getaway car."
That made sense. A mobile home wasn't exactly the subtlest way to race away from an assassination. And that was probably his fault, since he'd been the one who'd accidentally blown their stakeout, and was the one who couldn't get out of the RV on his own. On the upper level, though, everything about this mess was Wade's fault. Possibly Natasha's, seen from a certain angle. "Great. So my last meal is going to be fast cakes?"
"That's the spirit."
Teresa grinned, and chucked him gently in the shoulder. It felt sarcastic. Clint couldn't really blame her. It seemed like she spent time with Wade pretty often. And that probably didn't do much for anyone's patience. Except maybe test it. Outside, Wade was walking the perimeter. Or a perimeter, anyway. With a focus that was a lot more focused than Clint was used to. The whole last stand thing was maybe not a joke. But the farmhouse was a fucking terrible location for that kind of thing. Clint hadn't been aware of a tail, and even though his awareness in general was in pretty sorry shape, he thought that they probably had some time before anyone actually caught up to them. Given a vote, he'd vote to run. But that didn't seem like Wade's style. Teresa, on the other hand, didn't seem thrilled to be caught up in the sort of messes that involved masked villains, stolen campers, and single tracks of Italian opera set on repeat. Clint glanced away, out the window, to make sure Wade was still busy outside, then whispered, "Isn't there a back way we can sneak out of?"
"Think you're up for much sneaking, do you?"
she asked. And she had a point. Getting up the front steps and into the kitchen had been a challenge, and a hasty, stealthy exit was probably out of the question. In the OK Corral kind of situation it looked like Wade was setting up for, Clint would probably be most useful as a human shield. Damn it. It was agreement. He wasn't sure Teresa was picking up on that, and didn't really care. Possibly Wade was rubbing off on him. At least, in the one-sided communication department.
"Don't worry,"
Teresa said, unfazed. Maybe a bit amused. But in the kind of irritated way that Wade inspired.
"I'll keep you safe till your pickup gets here."
Clint started to say that he could keep himself safe, thanks. But it was pretty sure that he hadn't really done that much to stop Wade from dragging him all over the countryside. Had probably helped create this last stand problem by going along with Wade's plans. Which was the weirdest part. That Wade seemed to have a plan. He was pacing out measurements in the yard, definitely looking like he'd pre-organised this part. Clint had thought that the randomly driving around thing had been about throwing the Avengers off their trail. But all of a sudden, Wade didn't seem to care that they'd not only phoned the Avengers off a registered cell phone number, but had invited them up for the afternoon. Teresa gave him a look. Then her expression changed to one of exasperation.
"And then we can let Wade get back his disposal business,"
she continued, delayed, as if she'd been aware that Clint had been on a whole other mental track, and had been giving him time to get to the end of the thought. "I know what that is," Clint told her, a bit testily. "You don't have to dress it up. You know, I already shot a guy on this trip, right?" "A few guys." But apparently she didn't know that, because the look she gave him was surprised. Not really shocked, though. She seemed used to Wade. Clint stabbed his last piece of pancake, slouched, then winced, trying to straighten up, and winced again, said, "Fuck," and threw the fork back down.
"Hey."
Teresa held her hands up in what was either a peace gesture or a shut-up one.
"I'm just here to make sure he gives you back."
Clint glowered. Maybe sulked. "I go where I want," he snapped. "I'm a big boy."
"Feel free to click your heels together any time,"
she said.
"Until then, let me get you some new band-aids."
Terry the Red was a much better nurse than Wade. But Clint didn't think he could say so without making it weird, so he just grunted his thanks as he shrugged his way into a clean shirt, worn flannel, and found in one of the closets and smelling like dust and cedar. It was soft and a bit big, and mostly made Clint want to take a nap, even though Wade had moved on from whatever he'd been doing in the yard, and was back inside, shoving furniture against all the entrances. "I've seen this movie," Clint remarked. "I think it had more cowboys."
"Shush."
Clint glared but couldn't come up with a comment, and ended up shushing, mostly by default. "If this is a trap, I'm not shooting Avengers," he said, even though he was pretty sure that wasn't the case. When the silence had gone on for a while, and Wade had shoved a sofa against the front door, he suggested, "You should just let me go."
"And you'll what, return to the wild?"
Clint had been thinking more along the lines, borrow the car, or, in a pinch, try to hitchhike to the nearest town he could borrow a phone in, then call Steve, let him call the authorities, and then throw himself upon the mercy of, "You've let me off the hook for assassination before." Wade made a snappy fingers pointing gesture at him, like he'd come up with the right answer on a quiz, even though he hadn't said anything. And Clint frowned, pointed out, "I'm not really any use to you."
"Aw, you've been plenty of use to me."
Wade sounded encouraging, but this time the enthusiasm was a little distracted. "What about her?" Clint asked. "Are you really gonna..."
"Is that what this is about?"
"What?" Wade stopped what he was doing and put a hand on his hip, tilting his head in disappointment.
"Really now, Hawkeye?"
Clint set his teeth. "Really gonna get her involved in your mafia firefight?" he finished.
"I need her for the..."
Wade sounded shifty as fuck, and that was new. But only because Wade was usually utterly oblivious about his shiftiness.
"Help."
And when Clint kept scowling, sighed.
"But not more than you. You're helpful too. Oh, for God's sake. Here, have something shiny."
Wade handed him another gun.
"Are we good now?"
Clint felt dizzy. He wasn't sure if it was Wade's bullshit. Or the gun. Or the lingering effects of heatstroke. At least the sting of his sunburn was dulling, and if he lived long enough, would fade into gross peeling pretty soon. "Yeah. All right," he said, and took the new gun. Trying to talk sense with Wade was disorienting. And on top of the disorientation he was already dealing with, it seemed easier to give up, crawl up the stairs to one of the bedrooms, and collapse on his good side. Maybe he'd sleep through everything and wake up in lockup. Even if Steve was there to glare disapprovingly about his recent life choices, it It would be a step up. It was at least a plan, and it seemed like a halfway decent one. Right up until the front lawn exploded. Clint considered getting up. Then considered not getting up, for at least a minute and a half. Continuing to lie there while pretending everything was okay seemed like a perfectly reasonable option. Then he cursed, rolled to his belly and pushed to his elbows, waited for the room to swim sideways and back and come to a full stop, then grabbed for his guns, jamming one back into his waistband and clicking the safety off the other. Outside, something flashed and dirt sprayed against the windows. He should be worried, maybe. But the tearing feeling in his side as he shoved himself upright and the heat swimming behind his eyes seemed a lot more immediate. Wait. Then another boom and the sound of someone running into the house. Clint stumbled out to the hall, saw movement, and fired. Wade yelped. Shit!
That's why you didn't get a lot of bullets.
Wade yelled, sounding more annoyed at having been shot than actually fazed. He stormed up the hallway to hustle Clint back into the bedroom, where the windows faced the exploded lawn. There was nothing about the house that was bulletproof, or might provide protection. And Clint considered shooting Wade again, so he'd let go and let him take actual cover. Then remembered the comment about his ammunition ration, and didn't. Where's...
Get down.
Get down? We should be getting out! There's...
And hold your ears.
What?
Oh, never mind.
Wade sighed.
I'll do it.
And clapped his hands over Clint's ears, just as an ear-splitting noise started. Clint jerked it, but Wade had a pretty good grip. His fingers dug in as he squashed Clint's head between his palms, and he curled in on himself as the volume increased, hunching until Clint was pulled down and crushed against his chest. It muffled but didn't shut out the screech. The sound was impossible, loud and so high that it felt like his bones were vibrating from it, and might shatter like glass. It hurt enough that Clint dropped the gun to put his own hands over Wade's, to try to shut more of the sound out. What is that? He shouted pointlessly, and halfway to panic, and more or less into Wade's sternum. There was no way he could beat the sound for volume, but he yelled, "What's going on?" at Wade anyway, and then repeated it because screaming helped. The sound stopped. For the length of an extended breath, leaving Clint hollering on into the silence. And then it started again, rising in pitch this time, then moving away and fading, not all the way, but enough to be bearable. Then Wade let him go. What the hell? Clint asked, shoving away from him to fall backwards onto his butt and into an undignified sprawl. What?
Shh.
Don't fucking shush me. What's going on? What the hell is...
I can't hear you.
Wade cut him off, talking so loud that it was almost a shout.
Let my eardrums grow back. Hang on.
Clint hung. Maybe hyperventilated a little while he did it.
Are you breathing?
Wade asked after a bit.
Is that you?
He leaned in to peer at Clint, then turned an ear towards him while Clint tried to get his panting under control, and made a series of expressions while he tilted his head around. Then said,
Yep, I think I'm good now. You were saying?
What's going on? Clint repeated, the words coming out surprisingly calm. A little dazed, he fumbled to get his gun back in his hand and into a functional grip.
We're in a firefight.
He wasn't sure why he'd expected a useful answer. Hardly any of the answers Wade had ever given him had been information. Or at least... not useful information. Going with it seemed easier than fighting. Who do I aim at? No answer. Wade was busy assembling something. It seemed very rifle-like, in general, but the pieces Wade was pulling out of his stupid fishing vest were weird and alien, some of them lighting up with a muted glow as they screwed into place. "What is that?" Wade looked at him, dubiously. Like Clint was the one not firing on all cylinders. And to be fair, the thing in his hands had a pretty obvious gun shape. "Fine." Clint tried. "What's it for?"
"You, so cheer up."
"What's it do?" Clint rephrased, tucking his own gun away. More enthusiastic about the mystery rifle than maybe he should have been, or wanted to admit.
"Dunno."
Wade screwed a few more pieces together, frowning critically, then moved a couple around, flipped some switches, then pushed it into Clint's hands, reaching around him at the same time to steal one of the guns back. "Where did you..." Clint ran his hands over it, testing the heft and sighting down the barrel. "Is this what you were chasing down?"
"This and things like this. And we. I can share credit. Unhog the limelight. Sing duets. Save the world from experimental tech falling into the wrong hands and being bartered on the international black market."
Yeah.
"Cover me."
That wasn't what he'd been expecting. But before he could ask, "What?" again, Wade was out of the window.
"And... shove something in your ears,"
he shouted halfway down the rain spout, already recovered from Clint's gunshot in all of maybe 6 minutes. And Clint tried hard to hate him for it, but he couldn't scrape together the energy. "I don't know what this thing does," he shouted back, unwisely peering over the sill of the window Wade had gone out of. Outside, the yard was a mess, pocked with craters. And out beyond that, armoured cars were set up in a barricade, people moving around behind it and yelling. Normally that wouldn't faze Clint out too much, but his mobility was limited. Wade was a nutcase, and he still had no clue what was happening, or where Teresa was. Wade, though, was sprinting for a line of trees, dodging around in a jagged beeline. And Clint couldn't tell if he thought that was actually effective, or if he was just being an asshole. The last was likely enough that Clint almost wanted to let him take a few hits, and test the limits of his effective invulnerability. But he was supposed to provide cover fire. And with a new gun humming in his hands like a living thing, he had to admit, he wanted to provide cover fire. Or wanted to fire the gun. Anyway, it pretty much added up to the same thing. His hands were shaky. He had to prop the muzzle of the thing up on the windowsill, which wasn't exactly ideal. It restricted his movements, but not enough that he couldn't line up a shot, searching left and right until he got one of the armoured cars solidly in his sights. Then he took a breath, counted to a randomly selected number. 4, and pulled the trigger. The shot was silent, hardly even a vibration, just the hum that had been buzzing against his hands going suddenly and dramatically still, as even with his eyes shut, everything lit up. "Oh shit," Clint breathed. It was beautiful. Magical. Possibly had nuked Wade. Clint hoped he could survive it. Holy fuck. Something exploded in the yard. Wade's voice following, thank God, shouting,
"Just a landmine!"
For what was likely Clint's benefit. Clint got his head up to yell something back. Some comment about just or landmine. But before he could get a word out, the sound started up again. And before he could react to that, light burst all around him, and the windows exploded inwards. Fuck, they have one too, he thought. And then his back hit something. and everything went blissfully silent and dark. When he came back to awareness, he was outside. The house was on fire, and something was swooping around overhead, emitting that sound. But it was muffled and far away now, which was a relief, until Clint remembered being told to stuff his ears. He hoped the sound muting was being caused by concussion, and head trauma wasn't usually at the top of his list of preferred injury. But hanging around with Wade had changed a lot of what he'd thought were set-in-stone priorities. He was hunched behind Therese's little car, and it didn't seem like anyone had dragged him there, so Clint figured he'd stumbled out on his own, on autopilot, and barefoot, because he'd kicked his boots off when he'd lain down to take that stupid nap. He hadn't noticed earlier, but some of the pebbles under his feet were too sharp to ignore. That might slow him down a bit. At least he still had the rifle. Wade was nowhere to be seen, but there was a steady pop of gunfire from further around the house. It wasn't anything that could combat the light flash silent destruction of the new rifle, and practical near immortality aside, some assistance might be in order. He forced himself up to his knees, steadied the rifle over the hood of the car, found a workable angle, and hoped not to ignite up the fuel lines when he pulled the trigger. The yard lit up. The car jolted but didn't explode. Clint hissed in celebration and slid back to hunker down, panting and grinning, dizzy with exertion and adrenaline rush. Clint wanted him to sharpshoot, which meant that, possibly, the gun didn't have unlimited shots, and Wade had specific targets. This wasn't an elegant pick-em-off weapon, though. This left destruction as messy as the explosives Wade had planted under and around the driveway. And that wasn't Clint's usual style, but it was still pretty great. The screech picked up again, and Clint's hands tightened on the gun, but this time it set his teeth on edge. But nothing worse. Covering him, Clint realised, or maybe protecting the little car, because he was sure the sound was coming from Teresa. Either way, it was vibrating bullets out of the air, buying him time to shiver and retch and for the gun to recharge. He had to get up, had to shoot. Clint's head hurt. He waited for the hum under his hands to get fast and impatient, then struggled back up, lined up another shot and fired. The line of cars slammed together like dominoes, right before the light washed them from view. The gun was amazing. Clint could forgive Wade a lot, if he got to keep it. Maybe he could make a good criminal. He was seriously considering it, when a different hum started. Aircraft, and coming in fast. A jet shape that Clint would recognise anywhere. And just in time to wrap up Wade's mess for him. The wily bastard. It probably wasn't too hard to zero in on the action, with the house going like a beacon fire. For a second, Clint wondered if Terry was going to screech the gun down. But within seconds, it was sending leaves and earth and bits of mashed grass blowing across what was left of the yard, and against the car. And against Clint. Sending grit into his mouth and eyes. And then the siren wail kicked up again, and Clint tucked his head between his hands and held on. The air turned to pressure around him, then to wind, then light flushed in retaliation. There was no way the little two-door was going to provide enough protection from the return flashfire. As soon as Teresa stopped for a breath, Clint grabbed the rifle and ran, or crawled and stumbled, really, towards the burning house and the shelter of its stone foundation. Maybe it would have a door he could duck through. Maybe into a basement. Clint was willing to take his chances with the house fire, more than with a thug syndicate that he may or may not have executed members of. He didn't make it. Light flashed again, Something passed overhead bigger than Tracer, smaller than a Quinjet, and crashed into the ground beyond him. The end of Teresa's little two-door. And Clint had enough time to feel bad for it, before something zoomed past in the opposite direction, towards the barricade. Clint groaned, rolled onto his back, unsure when he'd even hit the ground, and listened to shouting, and shooting, and what sounded like metal crunching. And to Teresa's high wail. Sucked in this, maybe as clueless and unwilling as Clint had been. Then, he thought, fuck it. And fucking wait. And closed his eyes. This time, when he opened them, he was still lying where he'd fallen, staring up into shadow. It was kind of pleasant after all the flashing, until Clint's eyes focused, and he could make out red boots, and, hazily above that, a vague star shape. And from this low angle, even blurry, Steve looked pretty heroic with the light behind him and from this low angle, rim lit in orange by the fire still flickering somewhere off to Clint's left. Clint let his head roll, until it came up against Steve's foot, then slurred. Hey, Cap. How are the good guys? And grinned, for no real reason. Steve got bigger, closer, getting down to his knees, Clint realised, to touch his face and feel carefully over his shirt. Clint tried to swat him away, realised he was still holding the gun, and let it slide out of his fingers so he could push Steve back without the risk of accidentally shooting him in the face. Steve looked pretty unhappy about it. Maybe about the small gang war Clint had apparently helped to start. And it didn't look like it was an accident, was likely to fly with him or with Fury. So Clint didn't try to explain. Just sighed and, I tried, okay? He wasn't sure if it came out as actual words, because Steve's reaction was to look worried and say,
easy, Clint. Let me see.
He still sounded like they were both underwater, voice swimming in and out, and he was still tugging at Clint's shirt.
Venging was nice,
Clint told him apologetically, and tried to say something about being banditos now, that Steve didn't react to. Instead, he said,
don't move,
and pushed the gun further out of reach, before going for the hem of Clint's shirt again. This time Clint let him, hissed when Steve's fingers nudged at the edges of sore flesh.
Ow.
It was a clear whine. He'd learned a lot from Wade's.
Okay, just lie still.
It was a good idea. Steve wasn't the captain for no reason. But after a bit of another shape came into sight, hovering over him, then coming close the way Steve had, growing bigger in his vision, and glowing painfully at its centre, confusing the fuck out of him, until Tony's voice suddenly said,
good thing you're a lousy shot, widow.
And followed that with,
how are you doing, buddy? You look like roadkill.
Clint tried to repeat his bandito's explanation, but couldn't remember what it had been. Asked,
Wade?
Instead.
Helping Thor turn off the house, I think. Or teaching Hulk Mahjong. Who the hell knows? Just relax.
Then the discussion turned into a garbled exchange, mostly between Steve and Tony, but with interjections from Nat, which left Clint alone to get fidgety about how close they were, and how loud, and how it was making him feel claustrophobic and overwhelmed after mostly just driving around for weeks, listening to Whale Song, and taking long naps in the back seat while Wade drove. And stopped to steal bits of hazardous experimental weaponry now and then, but he hadn't been worrying too much about that at the time.
You need anything?
Steve asked. Still from too close, and with his hand still on Clint's hip to keep him from trying to get up.
Tony can get it.
Clint swallowed, tried to push him off again, then gave up.
White's girlfriend threw out my CDs,
he said, but Steve didn't get the significance. Wade, like an asshole, made himself scarce, and didn't stick around to provide explanations. Clint could understand that. He knew what it was like to live on the wrong side of the law, and erring on the side of getting out of Dodge was a pretty reasonable policy to maintain. He felt like an idiot for holding a grudge about it. It wasn't like he wanted to continue being held against his will. But it would have been nice to have had answers for Steve and S.H.I.E.L.D., beyond what they'd already put together on their own. But all he really had was a series of fairly incoherent reviews about the rest stops of America, and a rough estimate of how many days one could likely survive on a diet of cheese puffs, orange soda, and nothing else. At least he was being held in a proper hospital room, and not some shitty medicaled-up cell back at S.H.I.E.L.D.
So you shot a prince, some mafia guys, and a businessman?
Tony informed him, lounging with his feet up on the bed and crossed at the ankle, thin cardboard box on his lap, and coffee on Clint's nightstand. The room was too quiet, and if Tony was a pain in the ass, his chatter also felt familiar and soothing, unlike something Clint could knock into the background and doze off to.
Natasha really didn't mean to indirectly toss you to the underworld, by the way. The shooting you part, you'll have to ask about yourself. Donut?
Clint looked over. Made a face. Pass.
Huh. Okay.
Tony was mostly there to quiz him about the gun, Clint was pretty sure. Tony didn't look like he'd had any intention to actually share, and he didn't make any more attempts to. Clint wondered who had the gun. He didn't think Wade had come back to get it. He was pretty sure Wade had taken his girl and pissed off as soon as it was tactically feasible to. Or maybe he'd just pissed off on his own. Clint wasn't really sure, and hadn't asked. No one had volunteered to fill him in either. Not beyond surgery and keep you for observation. Which Clint half suspected meant something more along the lines of review your mental autonomy. Clint closed his eyes, had a weird moment of moving, not moving, and almost felt spots of sunlight flickering over his face. But he couldn't feel the hum of an engine, or the irregular bumping of a poorly maintained road. Opened his eyes, and focused on Tony to banish the phantom sensation. I don't know anything, he said. He thought he'd said that a lot by now, but maybe he'd just thought it. There was a mill house, a burger joint, the place where Wade had caved and brought him a sandwich, an unexpectedly simple plan to use the Avengers as backup firepower. Fuck. Clint finished, incoherently. Tony grinned, made a gross smacking noise as he licked powdered sugar off his fingers.
We missed you,
he said, between it. Then amended.
Cap missed you.
That was nice. Yeah, Clint told the ceiling, because he didn't feel like looking at Tony anymore. Me and my new criminal record. There was the guy he'd killed on the rooftop, for one. It probably sounded like a subject change, but Tony didn't seem to notice.
You had one already.
Clint glared. Tony raised a donut in what might have been a toast. Might have been a salute.
Why? Is the dark side still seducing you?
He said, and stuffed it into his mouth. Clint made a face. But if his grease and sugar tolerance wasn't back to normal, at least his fever was gone, along with most of the after-effects of having been left to bake on a rooftop. Like some kind of bad trip,
The whole Wade-orchestrated murder spree part of the misadventure might as well never have happened. Right up until he found himself being pulled off the street into a mail van weeks later, and a sack tossed over his head. Even on probation, and dressed like a civilian, he was an abduction magnet. It was good that they were excusing his crimes and letting him stay an Avenger, because he probably wouldn't survive on his own for that long, with no one duty-bound to come find him. "I don't really want to do evil bidding," Clint tried. "I'm still on medical leave."
"Evil bidding?"
Clint recognised that hurt and offended tone, the note of almost convincing shock.
"Maybe morally dubious bidding. Maybe grey area ethics bidding. Maybe justifiable in the name of the greater good bidding."
"Thanks for getting me shot, then getting me shot with an alien light cannon, then ditching me," Clint said. "Yells, maybe. At least that last part." Wade patted his head.
"There, there. Calm down. And I didn't get you shot. That first time. And I came back for you. I had a foot to regenerate."
How that took longer than the time he'd had to regenerate his entire actual life, Clint wasn't sure. Instead of asking about it, he went with, "What's with the fucking sack? I know who you are."
"That's why I'm here. Loose ends."
"What?" Wade patted him again.
"Kidding. I'm kidding. Relax. I thought you knew that joke."
Clint didn't answer. Would have tried to bite him if he hadn't had the sack over his hands. And only belatedly realised that his hands were free and he could remove it. He didn't want to examine that reflex, or lack of a reflex, too closely.
"I sent Captain America a thank you note,"
Wade said.
"For the sniper loan. I threw in some flowers, maybe a cupcake, and an objective review of your sidekicking skills. But I thought you'd want your stuff. You leave things all over the place. Honestly, if your head wasn't attached, I don't even know what you'd do."
Clint tugged the sack loose from around his neck. "If you're trading back for your shirt, I bled all over it. I think someone burnt it." No answer. When Clint pulled the sack off and tossed it away, the mail van was empty. It was pretty impressive escaping. Real smooth. Leaving no sign that Wade had been there, other than a small box, entirely covered in layers of self-adhesive stamps. Clint frowned. Tore through the stickers with a thumbnail to find violin CDs, the handgun that Wade had given him, then taken back, and parts he recognised from the stolen rifle. Along with what looked like a treasure map, drawn in ballpoint, and a list of locations and names. Those last two definitely weren't his, and probably weren't even meant for him. "Is this your fucking loose ends? What am I supposed to do with this?" he yelled at the roof of the van, just in case. But Wade was gone. Or not answering. Who the fuck knew? Clint sighed, gave himself a minute to glare into the box, then got his phone out, said, "Cap, guys, I think we've got mail. Might be an invite. You want to go on a trip?" And climbed into the front seat to put some music on, while he waited for the team to get there. The end.